What's going on, everyone? I'm Jeff St. Pierre, and this is episode 146 of the Adult Education Podcast. Today, I'm speaking with author Lisa Gardner. Thanks for checking out the show this week. I just appreciate the fact that you decided to share some of your day with me. If this is your first time listening to the Adult Education Podcast, welcome to the family. We love to have you. I would also love it if you would subscribe to the show so you're updated for all future episodes. And feel free to reach out and connect with me. The best way to do that is through Instagram. We are at Adult Education Podcast. You can see when new episodes are posted, and you can DM me with any comments, questions, and suggestions for future topics or guests. I always appreciate hearing from people that listen to the show. First of all, I do want to apologize for ghosting you for the last month. I had planned on taking a week off from the show, and then things just kind of fell apart. I got sick, then my wife got sick, and then my daughter after that, and added my kiddo's spring break and some other interruptions as well, and things just spiraled out of my control. I am back now, though, and I hope to have a nice string of episodes for you over the next few weeks. I'm excited about today's guest in particular because I've spoken with her before on the podcast. I don't usually get this much time with her, though. Lisa Gardner is an author. She's got way too many titles to her name to list off. She published her first book about 30 years ago and is still going strong, though there was a period last year where she wasn't sure if she'd ever do a book again. We'll talk about that in the conversation. I'll be the first to admit that her type of novels, not usually the ones that I go for. In fact, even though her career began some 30 years ago, I only just recently got into her work about 3 years ago when the first book in her Frankie Elkins series was released. It's called Before She Disappeared. I loved it and have been all in with Frankie Elkin in particular. The new book just came out and it's called Still See You Everywhere. It is so good. I love it. As I said, I don't usually get this much time with her because Lisa is so popular. I'm lucky if I can get 10 to 15 minutes to speak with her. But this time I was able to get about a half hour. So we got to talk about a lot of things, including her inspiration for the books, that year break that she took, and life in winter in New Hampshire. So I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Hi, how are you, Jeff?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm battling a cold, so please excuse the voice.
Oh, I'm so sorry you're dealing with that. It feels like everybody's doing that right now.
I can't decide if it's better timing to do it right before tour, at least just get it out of the way.
At least you're not getting it while you're on tour. You know, you can hopefully be done with it before you leave.
You know, there was 1 year by the time I hit Phoenix, I was so sick. My poor publisher paid for me to spend 3 days in a hotel room, which for the record, you cannot get hot tea in Arizona.
I guess why would you, right?
Yes. It was extremely disappointing to me. It's like 6 times a day with room service. I just want hot tea. You'd like iced tea? It's like,
like, do you guys know I live in the Northeast? Like, I need hot tea. This is my life.
Yeah, really.
So I'm wondering, since you've got a little cold now, this is going to be derailed because I live down in the Baltimore area, and I know you're in New Hampshire, I believe.
Yeah.
Is pollen like outrageous there this year? Because everybody's complaining about it here, like they've never seen pollen the way that it is right now.
Well, we still have snow because I'm up in the mountains.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
We're not there yet. But for the record, we're actually already in what we call mud season, which is the thaw. And that's generally like mid-April. Like, we're like 6 weeks ahead of schedule at this point. I mean, the big thing all the locals will tell you, once you start that, because it's such a gross process, to be honest, like I have 3 dogs and to take them outside is a 4-hour process because they are coming, you know, mud season is kind of what, exactly as it sounds, it is mud season. So like, there will be no more freezing or snowing now. We just have to get to the other side once you start the mud season process, you know?
Yeah, we track the beginning of spring with the cherry blossoms in DC,
yes.
And they've already started to come out. I mean, and it's
wow.
Seemingly so much earlier than it usually is. It's wild.
Yeah. For us, it was definitely a mild winter. I can never decide if that's good or bad. I mean, I don't mind the snow. It just felt like we had icy winter, which is less ideal.
My dad would say the same thing. My parents live in southern New Hampshire, so I grew up there. So I have a lot of background of what the winter season is like up that way. My dad would say the same thing. Every year he tells me how excited he is to use his snowblower, and it feels like more recently he has not had a chance to use it nearly as often as he would like.
Yeah, I don't know that I've used mine at all this year. Mm. You are correct.
I was planning a trip up there this summer. We're going to take my 3-year-old to Storyland because it's been a long time since we've been up that way. But things have not worked out. In fact, which is ironic because of your book, Still See You Everywhere, which takes place a lot in Hawaii, or at least an island off of Hawaii. My family, we're taking a trip to Hawaii instead. So we're going to skip out this year and try to do New Hampshire next year.
Well, if you do, reach out to me. For the record, I live 2 miles from Storyland.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you are right up there. Yeah.
Well, that's where I was with my daughter, like every day for the first 5 years.
Oh my gosh. I have so many fond memories. There's so many pictures of me and my siblings sitting on the Humpty Dumpty wall and everything there. Oh yeah.
You have a little girl. Let me tell you.
I can't wait. It's been a long time since we've gone up there to visit my family. It's not even that far away, but it just, for whatever reason, has not worked out. So we were excited for it, but it's just not going to happen this year. So we'll have to put it on the 2025 bucket list. No.
Enjoy Hawaii. I mean, if you have to.
I know. If we have to. Well, it's funny too, like reading through your books, the three books in the Frankie Elkin series. The first one was in Boston, which I grew up just north of Boston. The second one took place in the woods in Wyoming, if I'm not mistaken, right? And at the time, I was planning a trip to Wyoming, which did not come to fruition, but at the time. And now here we are with this book. We're planning a trip to Hawaii, which is happening. Yeah. And your book is based in an island off of Hawaii. I feel like you're following my life, but you're ahead of the game. Like, you know what's happening to me before I know.
That's what all the stalkers say, Jeff. I'm on to you.
I love this idea, and I love how you really dive into the locales. Last time we spoke about the last book in the series, it blows my mind how much detail you're able to give of these places that, for most of us, we haven't seen with our own two eyes. You know, and I think it's really amazing the picture that you paint with these.
You know, it's interesting to me. Tammy Hoag said this years ago when she had Night Sins coming out, and it was having to do with like midwinter Minnesota, where place can be one of your most important characters. And I think for the Frankie books, interesting enough, that is true. It's like, that's the other important character in the room. You can't just be in Boston. You have to be in Mattapan. You have to be in this really mixed, you know, nicknamed murder pan, but tons of working class families as well. And this robust cultural Haitian community, you know, Wyoming is just plain beautiful, but there's 8 million ways to die. And then, you know, Palmyra. So Palmyra Atoll, I went to the Nature Conservancy. And so that's a few hour plane flight out of Hawaii. And that was the basis for Pomakai. And I went there actually because of the research they're doing in ecological restoration. But I arrived and I'm like, oh my God, it's the perfect closed room mystery. I mean, there's 12 people on a remote atoll and they really don't know each other. They're all contract employees. There's the naturalists, there's fish and game people, there's the cooks, there's the engineers. They all transition in and out like 6 months, 9 months and move on. And yet, you know, our entire debriefing when we first got there was all about safety. Mm. You know, we'll be ready to muster at a moment's notice. We will not be drinking heavily at night. You will not be fraternizing with employees. If you have the smallest cut in the world, you will come get antibiotics. And I mean, I was there with 5 ladies. 2 ended up with major infections by the time we were done. Just from, I mean, it's just so damn humid. Mm. Everything grows and takes on a life of its own. And, you know, by day 3, as you got to see the personality start to disintegrate. Because we've been wet for 96 hours, which is one of those things. I mean, you think tropical island, yay. And then, you know, day three, you're like, I will give my firstborn for air conditioning right now, or just a dry towel, a dry sheet. I mean, everything is wet. And you're like, yeah, murder and mayhem. No one can get off. No one can get rescued. This is a thriller novel.
Yeah. No, I'm glad that you saw that while you were there and you had that thought, because you are right with Frankie. Like, the locale really is, it's a major character of those books, and because it's part of her personality where she's fighting for the voiceless. She's fighting for the people that don't get seen. They don't get heard the way that others do. And the locale is a big piece of that, because there's a reason these people are not being fought for and they're not being found.
Yeah. In the real world, when I did research for Frankie about, you know, how, I mean, reasonably speaking, how can a layperson ever make progress in a cold case? Because she actually is based on a real person. And we are seeing more of this trend of, you know, armchair sleuths actually trying to get involved in real investigations. And a lot of it is because they're not the cops. You're getting someone coming into a community where law enforcement is often suspect, asking questions more person to person. And time, you know, the more time that elapses, suddenly people are willing to talk now than don't. But it is that adaptability that's coming in. It's getting to know the people involved. It's kind of forming some kind of relationship and having that conversation along the way versus, you know, an outsider coming in, interrogating and exiting again.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. And I hadn't thought about it till just now, but I feel like this is not a part of Frankie's life, but I feel like the world of podcasting, you notice that so much. I mean, you have all these true crime podcasts where you have these random everyday people that are going to towns that they don't belong in, but they're getting everyone to talk to them and tell them these stories. And I always listen to that thinking, how do they have the balls to walk up to someone sitting at the local diner and say, tell me about this murder? But who are these people that are saying, I'll tell you all about it. Sit on down. I feel like I wouldn't get the same warm welcome if I were to be walking into that town. You know,
you got to admire the people who ask the questions. Come on, Annabelle, come on up. My puppy wants to join us.
Oh, come on over.
Come on.
Dogs are welcome.
Oh, I have three. There'll be another one joining us shortly. You got to do it on your own. I can't pick you up, my love. Come on, you got it. Go. Just do it. She's psyching herself out. She's 12 now. Doubt judgment. There you go, Annabelle. All right. The whole family's happy now.
Good.
These are the things that are important. Meet my coworker.
Oh my gosh. During the pandemic, that was me. We had two dogs during the pandemic. We have since lost one. But when we were working from home, we had two. They were always around. My feet were never cold.
I like to take video of them like sacked out, sound asleep under my desk.
Yes.
And I'm like, yes. I am working on Saturday and my coworkers are.
Can we go back in time just a little bit? Because I'm curious for you, and I discovered your work with Frankie Elkin. So this is my first time diving into your work. And I was just kind of looking through your bibliography the other day, and it's been just over 30 years since your first book was published. Now, the first book you published was under a pseudonym, but how does that feel? I mean, it's gotta be wild to think like, wow, I've been doing this for a long time.
Part of writing Still See You Everywhere is I actually took a 1-year sabbatical because it's been 30 years. And I wanted I just wanted 1 year without a deadline. My daughter had just gone off to college. I could actually do whatever I want. And it was interesting to me because I left it very loosey-goosey. My agent, my editors were all like, you're going to write a book. You're institutionalized at this point. There's no way you won't just come back with your next book, which, I kind of did, just for the record. So it's been interesting for me to think about because, man, the industry has changed so much. But it's also fun, all the trends that have come and gone. I'm a board member with the International Thriller Writers, and I work with the debut authors. I mean, their publishing experience now, whether it's Thomas and Mercer or an independent publisher or self-published, so totally different than back in the day. And yet still the angst, the worry, you know, how do I write the next book? Will anyone buy this book? That stuff, the business changes like crazy. The writing always remains the same. And I can't decide if that's the most comforting or terrifying part of my chosen profession. But I returned. It's like at the end of the day, they were right. I'm institutionalized. I had to return to the land of deadlines.
I'm glad you mentioned that because that was one of the things I wanted to ask you about. Because I you know, since for 30 years, you essentially put out a book a year. I mean, almost like clockwork, one book per year. And then last year goes by and there was no new Frankie Elkin book. And I started to wonder if you were done with the character. I was like, I got to Google Lisa Gardner and see if she's still writing books. And then I happened to see this one was coming up, which I was very excited to see. But I'm glad you took that break. I think it's important for people to sometimes take a step back and really just kind of, I don't know, live life.
You know, I joke, I renewed my marriage vows with my career.
Yeah.
You know, took a break off, you know, we saw other people and I was like, no, I can't live without you. So now we're back to being fully committed.
I didn't realize I've always been a lover of books, but I guess from the industry standpoint, I never really thought about how often books come out and how often authors will write books until I started speaking with people and doing interviews. And I think it was Riley Sager that I spoke with 3 years in a row, almost to the day. Each year. And finally, I was like, Riley, it's been 3 years in a row. Like, how are you putting books out? Like, my brain cannot fathom how you can put an entire book together in a year.
You know, the fun thing is, and Riley and I are good friends from Dutton, is it's a mystery to us too every time. I mean, we know it'll happen because we're professional novelists, but at the same time, there's definitely around the 3-month mark and then the 6-month mark and then the 3-day before deadline mark of, oh my God, this can't be done. It will never happen. And then it just does. It's like the magic that never gets tiring, that it seems like even for us, all hope is lost. And then, oh, wait, I do know who did it. Oh, I can't write the ending. And once more, somehow, through no actual talent or planning of your own, there's a novel.
Have you found in your career that there were moments where you were like, you know what? It's just not giving me the excitement that I want from it or that I've had from it.
There are times right before the sabbatical where the deadline just seemed heavy on me. But I will confess, I think like any writer, I have a million ideas in my head. You know, everyone's always like, well, where do you get the book ideas? I mean, Lee Child very famously said, it's more turning them off. That's the problem. And then just to sound totally psychotic, I have voices in my head all the time. Frankie's a voice, The Beautiful Butcher, like that opening prologue for Still See You Everywhere. I mean, I was on, you know, sabbatical, not supposed to write at all. And that just kept running through my mind again and again. And at that point, I'm like, oh, crap, I am writing another novel. It's like whatever the magic is that's writing, you can't turn it off. It's there at a certain point. Well, you might as well just write the damn book. I mean, I can't be the only one sitting around a sofa listening to people who don't exist. The rest of you might as well join the party.
Well, I'm happy. I'm happy that you wrote it because I've really enjoyed these Frankie books in particular. I wonder, am I wrong? Is Lee Child the author of Reacher?
Yes, Reacher.
And I was reading this book and I had just finished watching the Reacher series. And I was thinking to myself, Frankie Elkin kind of feels like a Reacher character.
Every now and then people will say she's the female Reacher. And I'm like, well, yeah. And that they both hearken back.
Yeah. Like a little bit. Kind of,
yeah. That, you know, and I actually think about this all the time, and Lee did for Reacher and I do for Frankie. Not everyone's meant to be civilized. I mean, the planet's gotten so crowded and our norms have become so normalized because we're seeing them on TV and on social media, and that this is what life looks like. It's the house, it's the white picket fence, it's the steady job, it is, you know, 2.2 children, it is the dog that you adopted during COVID. I mean, like, this is what life looks like. And yet I think for all of history of mankind, there are people that mold doesn't fit. I mean, Frankie, it's just not meant to be in one place. And her, as she says, you know, that's when she wants to drink. Her issue, I think, even, I mean, Reacher at least is military and he's male. So it's weird, but it's a little bit more forgivable. A female, I mean, I think there's a little bit more bias of, no, really. I mean, you must, you know, have fear of intimacy and not good at relationships. And okay, fine, that's all true too. But regardless, she's just not meant to be at one place. And I think the whole founding of civilization was because there's a certain segment of the population that's, yeah, I do want to see what's over there. And now that I've seen that, I want to see what's over there. Now that I've seen that, I'm going to go see what's over there.
I almost think too, you know, from a writing standpoint, it must give you a little bit more freedom too, because you don't have to feel handcuffed to one neighborhood or one state or one particular locale. You could write, the next book could be Frankie in Switzerland for all we know. You know what I mean? Frankie could be anywhere trying out these things and trying to find these people.
It is really fun for me because one of my passions is travel. I'm actually an international relations major. As of November, I completed all seven continents. I've done all the major cities. Yeah. So why I love setting books in Boston, which was, you know, Detective D.D. Warren, because Boston is a very rich town and there's a long history of homicide there that you've got to respect. It is nice because on my own, I'm a bit of a wanderer. So like that's something, you know, I can bring to the Frankie stories. You know, let's go to weird places on the equator where, you know, people within 3 days want to kill each other. And then our plane did not land. There was a weather, we got a storm and it could not come in. We were delayed an extra 3 days. If you thought people were a little, you know, edgy before that. It was also the plane with the food. So it was really edgy after that.
Oh, I can only imagine. How was Antarctica? A friend of mine, his wife is running the Antarctica Marathon or whatever it's called. She's running a marathon in Antarctica. And wow. So he's heading down there right now, I believe, to take care of all that. How was that visit? You said you visited all seven continents. I'm so fascinated by that, please.
Antarctica and Australia are now my tie for my two favorites. I loved everything about Antarctica and I'd really like to go back, partly because it's just gorgeous. I mean, you don't, People had said, you don't understand shades of blue till you go and you see these glaciers and you see them in the water. And you're right. There's, you know, I love the things as a novelist. I don't have the language to even describe that. Wow. There's nothing I will ever be able to put on page that will truly tell you what that shade of blue looks like. And it's also just, there's no land predators for penguins. Mm. So they literally just put us ashore and it's like, yeah, you know, in 4 to 6 hours, you know, catch the Zodiac back to the ship. And you just hung out with penguins. And they're funny and they're social and they're incredibly busy. And at a certain point, they got really annoyed with the humans. Like, come on, do something. I mean, you can't just stand around. It's Antarctica. Nest, forage, food, something, something. I mean, what's wrong with you?
I know. Why are you watching us? Just leave us alone. Yeah.
Well, yeah. See, originally it's the humans gathered around the penguins. At a certain point, it's the penguins gathered around the humans. Like, what's with this dude?
That's really funny. Was writing what you want? Because you went to UPenn, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Is writing what you wanted to do? Was that your goal? Or did you sort of...
So I actually wrote my first book before I even went to college.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, it was the summer before I went to Penn. I was a huge reader. My family's all engineers and math. We have no idea how to explain me. And I just got it into my head. I'm small town Oregon. I don't know any difference. I've never met New York, another author, a writer, anyone. So there's no one to tell me writing a book should be hard. I kind of say that's probably the recipe for success right there. So I spent the summer and I wrote a novel. It was dreadful, but it was a beginning, a middle, the end. And then when I went off to college and people said, what'd you do for the summer? And I'm like, oh, I wrote a book. Hmm. Like, so you're going to publish it? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I didn't actually think that far. And so, yeah, with a bit of encouragement, it took 3 years. But I sold my first book while I was still in college, wrote 2 more books while I was there. And it was also highly educational because I did get to be a published author. And the first book bought me a computer. The second book bought me a printer. The third book got me French fries. I went on. I became a research analyst. I did a bunch of stuff because while I enjoyed writing and I continued to write, I didn't yet see how you could make a living out of it. And it's when I met other authors and they started saying, you know, you really should get an agent. And then I got an agent. She's like, you're really good at killing people. You should write a thriller. And then it all came together. 10 years later, I was an overnight success.
That's how it works. 10-year town, they always say.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad that you've taken us into this world of Frankie Elkin. And, you know, I will say one frustrating thing about Frankie is the first book in particular, before she disappeared, the one based in Massachusetts, she meets this detective that sort of becomes a friend, but also sort of a foil at the same time. They have this weird relationship. But yeah. He's referenced in the next 2 books as well. I kind of want him to come back. Now, I haven't finished this one yet, so I don't know if he does make an appearance. But I kind of want him to come back. Like, I feel like I need him back in a Frankie book.
I like that about her, that there's always the possibilities there. And I'm going to tell you, between you and me, I think Frankie and Dee Dee in a book would be fun. You haven't read those books, but I think that I like it when other authors do it. And I think readers really enjoy it when, you know, your series don't have to inhabit separate silos. I mean, there's nothing wrong with kind of mixing and matching a little too.
Done that before with your other series a little bit, right?
Yeah. The very first time I did it was actually at a reader's request. I don't always do this because generally I have my next book idea, but whatever the crime was, several different jurisdictions could handle it. So I think I posted on Facebook or something silly like this, because this was like 10 years ago. You know, would you like the next book to be like Dee Dee or Tessa Leone or Kimberly Quincy, the FBI profiler? And it was dead evenly split. It was like 33, 30. So it's like, fine, we'll just put all of them in the book. It seemed the most reasonable answer to it all. And readers really enjoyed it. So it was a lot of fun. And it was challenging for me. You don't realize how much, you know, you're used to like playing one role in a book as the writer. It's almost like acting. Like, I'm this actress and I'm that actress. And to have them all in the book, it's like I kept having to consciously like switch voice. You know, because Dee Dee is not Kimberly, who's not Frankie. So it was a good exercise.
I would imagine that would make me go schizophrenic, like in there, like trying to figure out, wait, who am I right now? Who am I typing for? I have to type each one in a different color font just so I can.
Oh my God, where were you 10 years ago? That would have been brilliant.
But that's cool about your characters, because they live in very distinct universes, but they're still the same world, or maybe I don't know, whatever, you know what I'm getting at. Yeah. They have their own place, but they still live in, you know, 2024 America, whatever. Yeah. So it's not like one of them's in futuristic Mars. Like, you are still here. Yeah. So you could have a crossover. You could have them cross paths for some mission.
Well,
some,
especially because in the real world of criminal justice, there's often multi-jurisdictional, can I say that, investigations. So it's, you know, I can provide all the different jurisdictions.
I don't know if we've talked about this before in our previous conversations, but why is it so important for you? I know you said Frankie is based on a real person and Frankie is trying to find the people that no one's looking for. Why is it important to you to tell the stories of these people that seemingly have been forgotten?
At its best, I think a work of fiction enables you to walk in someone else's shoes. I grew up rural and in small towns, and books were how I dreamed. Books were how I traveled. Books were how I experienced all these lives and jobs and lifestyles that, living in a small town in the middle of nowhere, I never would have known about. And I think when you start looking at the missing, the world's not looking for, these are the people who, they're the other, they're outsiders. But those are the experiences I think we need to understand more than anything. I think we spend a lot of time in today's day and age thinking of all the ways we're different, and not nearly enough time thinking about all the ways we're the same. And I think that's what Frankie does. That's her superpower. She's not judgmental. She takes people as we're all doing the best we can. And she's an excellent listener in a world where I feel like all the rest of us do is just talk. But no one's listening anymore.
I think that's something that I love about her, and that it's, she's just a person. Like, there isn't, there's no identity politics. There's no, I can't talk to you because you believe this. She's just a human being going through life. Now, she goes through it in a unique way, but she's just a human being going through life. And I feel like we've kind of lost some of that part of it.
Well, and this is the way she can do all these different towns and cultures and experiences, is because she is trying to find the commonality in them all. And in doing that, she's always somewhat kind of at home. Like, she makes friends very easily. I mean, she's not going to write later or send postcards or nurture these forever, but when she meets people, she can see a way to relate to them and she can form that connection. And now she's no longer an outsider in that community, is she?
Yeah.
It's like, if you go in looking for, giving people the benefit of the doubt and looking for what you have in common, life, you know, possibly might be easier to navigate.
No, it's so true. And, you know, I think even just when I first opened up the book for Before She Disappeared, when she's going into Mattapan, I'm thinking, I'm like, you are not welcome. Like, this is not where you belong. Yeah. But you're right. Like, she goes in with no bias, just comes in and sits down and starts talking to people like they're human beings. And I think that's so hard sometimes, because you know the background of what this area might mean, or how, you know, dangerous or unsafe a place might be. So you have a bias, but Frankie doesn't really seem to have that.
Yeah. I mean, when I was doing the research in Mattapan, you know, myself and I had a female friend who's even smaller than me in this adorable little blonde. So, you know, we were clearly quite threatening and intimidating to others who were wandering the streets of Mattapan. And I was going into the little local Haitian restaurants and saying, hey, I'm looking to write a book about this area. I'm looking to write about the Haitian experience. And you could watch them light up. Mm. People want to talk about their lives. They want to share their culture, their heritage. Every now and then there were some language gaps, but a lot of the places didn't open till 4, and their kids were coming home from school and their kids had excellent English. So if anything, they're like, stay. And then we got the nicest teenagers, I mean, heaven forbid, you know, you know, walking us all through the menus, and this is why it's important, and this is what we would eat back home, and this is my grandmother's favorite dish. And I mean, people do want to share. People want you to understand them. You just have to take the time.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Well, I love that Frankie does. And I love that you've created this character and this world in which she lives. The book I'm about, I was ready to sit down this weekend and dive into it. And then I got a dose of food poisoning, which knocked me out. The last thing I wanted to do was read, unfortunately, while I was sitting on the couch. But I'm about a quarter of the way through and I'm already hooked and ready to see what happens next, especially with that wolf spider on the ceiling of the bedroom. Which would terrify me. I would just swim my way back to Hawaii if that was in my bedroom.
Wolfie was my roommate and Krabby was my roommate.
Oh, you had life, you had both.
In real life, yeah. So every night when I snapped on the light, the first thing I did was check out, where's Wolfie?
Yeah.
Is he still in his little half of the cabin? And I mean, there's just crabs everywhere. I mean, they told us there'd be crabs, but I had no understanding the number and the variety. And the ghost crabs, which is what crabby is, a little, these little orange crabs, they're just adorable because they're so shy. And if you see them, they like freeze. Like, now you can't see me. And it's like, dude, you're in the middle of the path. I can actually still see you. You know. But then just to win over our hearts, the terror of Pomakai, Palmyra, is the coconut crabs, which are huge and nasty, but they're cannibals. So at night, you know, and heaven forbid, we're 50-year-old women, keep having to use the latrine, the coconut crabs are all over the pathways and they are hunting the ghost crabs. And so you'd see them and I'd like come scurrying back, crabby, stay there, just stay under, now's not a good time. And periodically you'd see him snatch one and drag it into the underbrush. And it's always interesting to me. I can kill as many humans as you want, but that broke my heart every time. So can we do intervention? Can we?
Well, that explains why reading this book, it feels so real, because it's very real. You really experienced so much of what you wrote in this book.
You know, it's a wild environment. It was incredibly rustic and it belonged to nature and nature was taking it back. And that was good in a lot of ways. And it was out of the comfort zone for most of us who are used to, I don't know, electricity, plumbing, things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Lisa, always a pleasure to speak with you. I look forward to finishing the book. Thank you for continuing with the Frankie series and coming back from your sabbatical. And I hope that we'll have a fourth book at some point in the near future.
Working at it already.
All so right. Thank you for doing this show. That was my way to lead you into telling me if we were going to have another one. You took the bait. We're good to go.
Thanks to Lisa Gardner for her time. Always a pleasure catching up with her. Check out her new book called Still See You Everywhere. It's out now wherever you get your books. Also, thank you to all of you for your time. I appreciate you taking time out of your day to join me on the Adult Education Podcast. Until next time, be well.